You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Gordana Zsikic. She's talking to me from Barcelona. Gordana, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, I mean, it's hard not to ask, like, you know, what's happening in Barcelona right now at this time, but I think because of, you know, the attacks just last week, that's a pretty intense time to be there. But I don't know if you want to say anything about that, but I really want to ask you just what you're working on right now there in Barcelona, and you know, I know you're working on a variety of things, so I just wanted to ask you about what are you working on there?
Well, at the moment, I'm in Barcelona because originally I'm from Serbia, so like I live in Belgrade, Serbia, and I'm a visual artist, but I also run an artist-in-residency program. It's called Belgrade Artist-in-Residence, and at the moment I'm looking for similar organizations in Barcelona so to start a collaboration. We already are starting collaboration with Gothenburg, Sweden. It's going to be an exchange. One artist will go there and once a year, and one artist from Sweden will come to Belgrade. So I'm thinking it will be really great if I can find a similar organization here in Barcelona so we can start similar exchange also with that. And besides artist in residency, I'm a visual artist, and at the moment I'm working on my PhD. So that's a new thing at the Faculty of Fine Arts in Belgrade. We have a PhD program that's practical. So I'm supposed to make an exhibition and to write about my own work and about the exhibition that's going to happen. So I'm working on that really intensely, and it's pretty hard. I mean, as a visual artist, for me, it's everything is pretty much visual. So it's really fun, and it's really a lot of work, but I'm really enjoying the part of, like, creating and preparing for the exhibition. But I'm a bit nervous for the writing part. It's going really slow, and I think, like, that's for most visual artists, it's a problem, like, the writing part.
So tell me more about this exhibition, and maybe we could talk a little bit about the writing part, too. That's interesting, but tell me a little bit more about how it will all come together in the end, or look.
Well, I'm interested in the themes of shamanism and art, and especially neo-shamanism. So, like, I'm working on several pieces. The exhibition is going to include wall drawings and installation of objects on the wall and in the space. I'm preparing, like, making small drawings and, like, drawing a lot generally, and at the end I will just choose a few pieces that's going to be on the wall. So the idea is to make an exhibition. The room, like the gallery itself, should look kind of like a temple. So it will be, like, for the visitor to experience other kind of reality, like, similar to temples. So, like, they can stay in this environment and spend some time and, like, almost like a meditation kind of. I'm working on this, but it's always hard, like, when I have to talk about my own work. I get confused from time to time.
Well, it's just, what it is interesting. I mean, you know, maybe we can talk also about shamanism a little bit, because you talked about forms of shamanism, but also new shamanism. Was that the term you used?
Yes, new shamanism.
So what is new shamanism? Yeah, let's unpack that a little bit. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, well, the new shamanism, it's not it's a term that explains, like, different practices all over the world, and it's more like a new age concept. So it covers many philosophies and many activities. It's basically people who are working with that. They believe, like, in spirit world and in altered states of consciousness. So, like, usually it's what it makes it different from, like, the original shamanism, that the people don't have to be from some indigenous culture, so they don't have to be introduced through through like their ancestors into it. They can be introduced through different workshops. So that's like the new age part. And that would include like some old techniques, but also some new techniques. So it's kind of like a combination. It's more like influenced from everything that we're like living right now. So like the differences from the shamanism, that in shamanism, I don't know, have you read maybe like something from Mircea Eliade, like the famous classic that's called Shamanism, the archaic techniques of ecstasy. So like he's covering. It's really interesting because it's covering from all over the world. He was one of the first that was actually noticing that there is similar practices all over the world, because like some people believe that shamanism it's just from Siberia, so that you have to be from those areas and to be introduced into shamanism if you have like some sign that you are meant to be and all the other things. But Mircea Eliade was saying that he was noticing and writing and comparing from all over the world different forms of shamanism. And in that way, I think that actually opened the path for the new shamanism, because like we can connect all different practices that's going all over the world. I mean, it's a really wide theme, so like I'm rushing right now trying to explain everything at once.
That's okay. I think it's nice to get into it a little bit. I mean, shamanism is, you know, that is something that I do associate with kind of ancient culture. So the idea of new shamanism and practices that we could become involved in sounds very interesting. Is something like, does ayahuasca figure into that? I've talked to and interviewed different artists that use ayahuasca or have participated in those ceremonies that they often describe as being shamanic in some form. Would you consider that also part of this your kind of study or exploration or interest?
That is actually one part of it, but I'm more interested in other methods. For example, like there is different rhythmic techniques such as hypnotic dancing or drumming. I think those are safer than drugs and more controllable, so I prefer that. And I think like for ayahuasca it would be probably better if you're like in Peru or Amazon or somewhere there where its origin. I think it can be maybe a bit dangerous if you're like somewhere in Europe and someone is just bringing it as a drug. I think it's not a good idea. I think like if I would ever try ayahuasca, I would do it like in a tribe with real shaman.
Right. I mean, I guess that's the difference. What is a real shaman as opposed to someone who's performing like a shaman?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big difference. Like the real shaman has more experience, and I think that can be also an interesting thing. Like if you're attending some workshops, like I did attend a few workshops in Serbia. I mean, like, I didn't have a lot of chance to travel, but I think, like, people should be aware and careful, like, what are they offending, because I think there is so many things that are just going, like, under these terms, so it can be tricky.
So how do you know? I mean, this is a very interesting and kind of unusual area to be getting into. So how do you know the difference between, because, you know, these are, for some, mind-altering experience, as is drumming and other experiences. How do you know a real shaman from one that's not?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, like, it's research as everything else, like trying to see like if there is anything behind it, or if it's just someone just decided to be a shaman, like if you can find more information about the person. I don't know. I guess like there is no real answer to that. Like you can never be sure, but like following your gut feeling, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. So let's in other parts of the exhibit. So that are going to reflect on shamanism would be what you mentioned a few of the elements at the beginning. Are there other elements that are also going to be involved?
Well, yes, the installation. I didn't say much about the installation. So it's going to include the objects that I'm collecting over the years. So it's the objects that are kind of like magical ritual objects, but they're not really all used. Like, I'm just using my intuition to choose which objects I was collecting over the years. So they were, they're from personal archive. Some of them are already ready-made. They're in combination with some small sculptures that I was making from different materials, like paper mache or copper wire, even human hair, feathers. Like, I have three cats, so, like, I'm also using cat hair, like, to make some small sculptures. And so, like, they have a narrative behind, and it's intertwined with different ancient cultures and mythologies. And it's inspired, basically, with different sculptures from ancient temples and, like, from what I was, like, when I was researching over online or through books, like, I was finding, like, so many inspiring things. So, like, I'm just, like, using my inspiration and intuition to make objects, so they don't have, like, practical value. Like, it's more artistic freedom. So I'm making, like, some of the sculptures, they just look like ritual objects, but they are not exactly, like, for the purpose. But then, like, later on when I'm researching, then I find interesting things. Like, for example, like, I don't know, I was collecting different items, for example, like coconut shell. And then later on when I was reading, I found out, like, in some distant tribes, they were using exactly coconut shells. And I was already collecting that for, like, I didn't know the reason. So I'm thinking, like, the narrative behind also, like, it's creating kind of like personal mythology, and also, like, making it a connection with, like, real mythologies from all over the world.
I like that. So let's talk about that one that you mentioned, if I could ask, which is, what were you making with cat hair? Because that does sound like it's drawing on ancient traditions and then also a very unusual material. How are you using cat hair to make sculptures? What's the process of that, and what are you making for them with them, if I can ask?
Yeah, I was making small sculptures, like, using traditional felting method with a needle. So it's basically like as you would use a wool. So you can just, the cat hair is softer, but it's also possible to make it as felt. So, like, I was also trying, like, this wet felting technique when you use the soap and the water. So, like, you practically stress the wool, in this case, the cat hair. So you can roll it, and it becomes, like, dense and harder. So, and while you're doing it, you can shape it. So, like, I made three little cats, each from my cat's hair. And also, like, at the moment, I'm making some mask that's going to be, like, a cat face mask. Like, thick, so, like, you can put it all over your face, and it's kind of like masks and little sculptures, and of course,
like,
it can be, like, very big, because, like, I'm brushing my cats regularly, but, like, just, like, I get a little bit over the time, like, so I have to be careful, like, how I'm using the material.
Right. And so it's very interesting, and I'm excited about that. Is there any other performative things happening with the show? It feels like it should be, I mean, as an installation is interactive, but are there other ways that the audience is going to interact with it? You were talking about that a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I'm thinking, well, still not decided completely yet, because I'm making some masks, and I was taking photos of myself with these masks and short videos. So I'm still, like, considering how I'm going to include that. But now I'm thinking that I'm having these masks. They're like costumes. They can be also on display, so maybe visitors can interact and they can try costumes. Or I will see, like, still with that, like, how exactly I'm going to include those pieces in the exhibition. But, yes, also, like, the experience, it's the most important. I think, like, the visitors can spend time, so the space becomes sort of as a temple, like a portal to a magical world. They can sit there, like, gain reflection, have, like, contemplative experience when spending time in this space installation. So yeah, that's also part of the interaction.
I like that. It's and when will that open up, and where will that be?
I'm still waiting for the, because the gallery that belongs to the Faculty of Fine Arts, it's in center of Belgrade, so as a student, I can have an exhibition there, but they're still making a schedule, so like, I should know by the end of September. I'm hoping to have it sometime in the winter, like maybe December, January, so that then I can have time. I'm supposed to finish by the end of June, so, and they have really strict schedule. After the exhibition, I have 2 months to give my written thesis for the professors to read it, so I have really to plan
right,
everything
that's,
up.
That's the hard part, right? As you were saying, that's the writing, your thesis that you have to finish.
Right. Yes, it's the writing itself, it's hard, and I have to write about my own work that has to be like a long way with making the artworks and preparing the exhibition. So it's kind of pretty hard to manage everything at the same time.
Mm. Well, it's exciting that you're doing this. And so just to ask you one more thing about the residency, and then that you're trying to get other partners in different places like you have. Once before, how does the residency work? Are you one of the founders of the residency, or what's your role in the residency?
Yes, I'm one of the co-founders of the residency. So it's the artist-run space. We have space for the accommodation of the artists, and also we have a space that's kind of like a multi-purpose space. It's the studio, and also in this studio we have like different rooms. So one room, it can be used as a studio, but also it can be used as a gallery space. So it's kind of like an alternative gallery space, because it's not so classical, like with a big windows that you can see from the street. You really have to know that it's in the building, so you have to enter. It's a ground floor, so it's pretty easy, but you still have to know where to ring and to enter the building. And in that way, like, it's kind of like alternative. And, so we have, like, this space, so artists can apply. There is no specific application. At the moment, we don't have any scholarships. So, like, we're planning to have one week during the winter to make it free. So we'll make an open call for that. But for the other times, artists have to pay for the accommodation, because we're renting the spaces. So, like, we're just practically covering the rent, nothing else. And we have one more interesting thing. Besides regular artists in residency, we have martial artists in residency. So it's like in a collaboration with martial arts space that's close by. And we had our first martial artist from Canada last year. He's actually using martial arts in connection with his art. And that he was the first and still the only one that was doing it exactly that way. But I'm hoping, like, I don't know how to promote it, because it's a pretty, like, different thing. Like, I don't think people understand fully, like, what we're offering. So now we're thinking, like, it's not just for martial arts, it's kinetic arts. So it can be also for art performers or dancers or martial artists or actors, because it can cover a variety of artistic disciplines. And everybody who are working on movement and the body, and if they wish to incorporate it into their artistic practice or develop movement and training in their practice and exploring possibilities of the body itself.
That's very interesting. Like, no, you're not. It's funny. I'm listening to you, and I like you talking about that, because when I was in, and the idea of a martial artist, you know, when I was in college, in art school, my roommate was a martial artist, you know, and he, you know, he was a black belt in a few things, and he was always doing different physical forms of what he was doing. It was an art school, and he wasn't taking art. He was doing other kinds of things, science and whatever, but it was an art school. And one day he came home and he said, I realized what I am. I am a martial artist. And the way she said it, you know, also was kind of redefining. Yes, he wasn't using it for visual art, but just the idea of, you know, defining that as a type of artist, which it normally isn't, is confusing and very interesting and fun, I think. I like that.
Yeah, because we got the idea because my partner, he's a martial artist and also artist, and we know a lot of artists who are practicing martial arts. I mean, a lot. Like, we have several friends from Serbia that are also martial artists and artists. That's how we got the idea, that we already have all these connections and we're having this, already doing all that. So that's how we got the idea to offer that for someone else. And then, through a friend, we were recommended to this Canadian artist. That's how he found us. So I'm hoping that more people will hear about it and that we can make something more out of it.
Well, I'm sure they will. I mean, you can leave information, and that could be, some of that information could be in the interview. But before we go, I want to also ask you what you're reading at the moment. The question I ask everybody could be anything off topic, but I'm just curious what you're reading.
Oh, I'm reading so many books. I don't know how to decide. Maybe I can name a few. And I was already mentioning Mircea Eliade, Shamanism, Archaic Techniques of Ecstasy. And that's a book about different forms of shamanism from all around the world. And also, I'm reading the book called Blue, The History of One Color, Michel Pastoureau. It's a fantastic book from the same author. He was writing about different colors. So there is a book about black color or blue color or green color. And it's a really interesting. He's comparing how the blue color was developing through the history, in art and religion and society in general. And, for example, before Middle Ages, basic colors were just red, white, and black. No one was mentioning blue. And then over time, how society was developing and, symbolism of colors were changing. So it's really interesting how he's comparing blue with other colors. And it's a fantastic book. I'm really thrilled. And one more, Milarepa, The Life of Milarepa. It's a famous yogi and saint from Tibet, and it's the book about his life, his quest from, he was an
poet,
evil sorcerer.
Also a poet. Wasn't he also a poet, right? Milarepa,
yes.
A poet or no?
Yes, he was also a poet. And at the beginning of his life, he was an evil sorcerer, and then at the end of his life, he became a saint. So it's a fantastic book. It's full of magic and about religion, religious life of Tibet at the time. So it's really interesting. That's one of my favorite books. I'm reading it for a second time now. But I'm always reading several books at the same time.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I'm particularly interested in that. I want to thank you, Gordana, for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure, and I wish you good luck with your show and residency.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.